Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Eastern Lariat. This is the life and death of Hana Kimura, Dangerous Flower Forever. Of course, I'm your host Striga. We are here for a very sad discussion today because, of course, this past weekend we learned that Hana Kimura, at the age of 22, committed suicide, and that has hit, well, the Japanese wrestling community on and offline extremely hard. Dylan, how do you feel right now?
Well, this is such a terrible thing that we've been through, and just a really bad week in wrestling in general, the last week leading up to it. So already it was going to be kind of a downtime. Even in Hana's company, we already had the retirement of Ari Sahoshiki, which I was so depressed by when that happened. You know, one of my favorite wrestlers in the world, somebody with an injury very similar to mine too, and saying some stuff on Twitter that I can really relate to on a personal level. So then we got to later in the week with Hana Kimura and what she was going through, and unfortunately, the tragic end that came to the circumstances surrounding Hana. And now we're just in the aftermath of it. We're only, two or three days since her unfortunate death. And we're seeing the aftermath of that with all of the people on Twitter. Man, it was like that first day, like it was like 24 hours straight of Hana online.
Yeah.
Through all corners of wrestling too, and many, many different people in wrestling and even outside of wrestling, you know, this has really affected so many people.
Yeah, you know, it has been on the news in Germany, and it is really unfortunate that wrestling only appears in the news when there is something horribly wrong. I've read that it has been picked up by big news outlets in the US too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, as I said, it's really unfortunate that wrestling only appears in the public eye. When cases like these happen, it's very unfortunate. I can't really say anything else about that. As you said, the first day was really hard. And, you talked about other cases that we had this past week. Usually when I don't really have a strong connection to those who died, I'm not the one to post RIP so-and-so. I don't really feel like I'm in the position to do when I don't really have a strong connection to them. And I've learned to shut up if I don't have anything to say. But this one was vastly different. I posted it on Twitter. She was one of my absolute favorites in Yoshi, and I'm far from being a Yoshi expert. I don't watch as much Yoshi as you do or as others do that may be listening to this show, but whenever I got to watch Yoshi wrestling, I had my certain favorites, and Hana in the last couple of years, and that is something that we always talked about on this show, she always was one of those that I always made time to watch because I thought that she was really special, and she's been around for most of the time that this show has been going, so we really followed her career from the get-go. Mm-hmm. So overall, this death, and especially the circumstances of how it all happened, has hit me personally harder than anything I can remember, to be quite honest, because of the very nature of it. Like, I was browsing through Twitter on late Saturday German time, and I saw those tweets, and I saw people don't go to her Twitter. I did nonetheless, and I saw the pictures and I saw the tweets, and I was thinking, okay, this is bad, and others had picked it up. And by the time I went to bed, I was going to bed under the impression that people had reached out to her and had gotten into contact with Hana and couple of hours later, I woke up to the news that she had passed away. So that was like a punch to the gut, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And when you look at that, like when we first saw those posts, like I saw them pretty much when she posted them. And that was so terrifying to me, for so many reasons. And like, just the fact that that happened, the fact that she was in so much distress, and obviously considering what happened, we know that, but the fact that she was in so much distress that she would go so far to put those out there, to reach out publicly with that. And we can only imagine what she was holding in before it got to that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, WH was on Post Perezo this weekend, and they talked about her in-ring presence, where it always felt like that she was this very strong character. And as you said, that she probably had held this in before everything went down, and otherwise people... If she hadn't, otherwise people might have been able to do something about it. But it doesn't seem like that she really talked about it to anyone. So nobody really knew, and she had to keep it all in. And man, I don't want to know how that feels. That you have to, well, you choose to keep that all in, and you can't really talk to anyone about it because you don't feel like you can, you know. And of course, her putting all that out there, even she went to bring her kitten to the Stardom Dojo before she committed suicide. And she put the tweets out, and we were bound to follow that all along on social media without being able to do anything about it. I mean, nobody could do anything about it. And that's the hard part. I don't know, it's extremely hard to begin with, but the even harder part is that nobody was able to do anything. Not her friends, not her co-workers, not her mother. Nobody was able to prevent that. And that is something I don't know if you can ever put that aside.
No, I just want to take it back a little bit to what you said. You know, what you mentioned on Post Perez with them. Her character was so strong and, you know, so confident in herself. But the thing is that what we saw was before things really got out of control anyway, because Stardom hasn't been running shows in the last couple of months when all this really started. So there's no telling what, you know, like there's just no way we could have known what she was feeling in these past couple of months. But you know, there were some signs out there that, you know, people saw, and after everything happened and stuff, on her Zoom call with Jungle Kiona, you know, if you want to investigate into it, like when I saw that she was already wearing some of those scars, I was really guilty, you know, like why didn't I notice?
Yeah.
Be honest with you. Like, and it was so sad for me on a personal level because, you know, like, you know, I've had a little bit of a history with this. My regular job for a long time was on a crisis hotline, hearing all kinds of stories. Nothing like this, obviously, no celebrities. And even my ex-fiance, like, had a really bad history with this sort of thing. Hmm. And it reminded me of her when I saw it. I'm sorry. Give me a second.
Completely okay. But, just
yeah, yeah. Okay.
Just let it okay. out here. It's
yeah. Yeah. But I apologize for that. But
no. You know, if you apologize.
Yeah. But yeah, it really reminded me of all that. So it was a really terrifying thing to see those pictures, and all I could think of is how I wish somebody could have done something. Like, not even just me, but just somebody. But I know that they tried. We saw a lot of the posts afterwards.
We saw Jungle tweet about it. We saw Asuka tweet about it. And They apparently were the two of the closest friends she had.
Yeah.
But there was, as I said, there was nothing they could do about it. She had made, I don't know, I can't go into anyone's mind, and I of course can't go into her mind, but my assumption of that is that she had made her decision and nobody was able to prevent that anymore.
My thoughts and my heart is out with Jungle, you know.
Yes.
Being so close to that decision,
and
you know.
I don't have kids, but I've received messages from people who do.
Yeah.
And so Kyoko was one of the first to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you would feel as a mom.
Oh, God. You know, there's nothing that we could do, really. I don't think there's anything that could even begin to take away that sort of thing. Or really, with somebody like us that doesn't have kids, like you said, that's kind of like an impossible thing to understand. And all I know is that everything I've ever known about other parents and stuff like that is that, you know, you never want to see your kids die. You never want to outlive your kids. That's just a horrible thing to think about.
It's one of the worst images I've ever seen in my entire life. Someone who I went to school with committed suicide, and we went to the funeral. And the worst image I've ever seen was the parents standing at the graveside. I can't ever forget that image. I don't think that anyone can ever forget that. That's what I was saying earlier. So.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody would even... Like I said, I feel like that's a universal thought that anybody can relate to. Even if you don't have kids, I think that's something that really anybody can relate to. And these strong feelings, you know, all I can say is that I hope that they can find some way to you know, just get through this as best as they can. I don't think anybody can really, you know, fully recover from something like this. But I can only hope that they can get through it and find some kind of happiness going forward and keep the good memories alive of Hana. And it's crazy. Like I said, I know, like I, you know, things are getting kind of heavy right now and stuff, but when I first thought about doing this show with you, even before I messaged you about it and stuff, we started talking about it a little, I really hope that, you know, I'm really glad that we're talking about all this stuff to start off the show, because when we get to the other stuff, I really want everyone to remember Hana for way more than this last part, because all these major news stories and stuff like that are, you know, they're going to zone in on this, like the last day of her life, and maybe some other bullcrap, you know. But she was so much more than that. She was such an amazing influence, and you saw it. That's why there were so many people online that really gravitated towards her. You know, friends, fans, family, every one of them, you know, there was a lot of pain that came from this, but also a lot of love that was expressed for Hana Kimura as well. And I think that's something that's really special when you look at it, that she touched so many people in a very brief career, ultimately. But still, like, you know, like you said, watching her, we've been watching her ever since she debuted. We've seen her whole career. And from the beginning, it felt like she just drew people in. She had something special about her. So I do think that was one positive about that.
Yes, that was what I was saying on Twitter as well on Saturday morning when I read the news, that I always felt that she was such a, I call it a shining person, or you might call it someone who just oozed this charisma, this friendly spirit, this charisma that was, that you can't really define, you can't point your finger on it, but it is there. It's in the room. When she's there, when she's in a room, you know that the room is filled with someone who's just a very special person. And that is what she brought to the ring as well, and that is why I always thought that she would be something special and that she would be a big, big star. And she was on the way of being just that. And as you said, a lot of people pour out their hearts, and In the meantime, there have been numerous hashtags on Twitter. Two of them were, one of them in Japanese was, let's fill the timeline with flowers. And the other one in English was flowers for Hana. So people posted pictures of her, pictures of flowers. That was very beautiful. That's a very, very beautiful hashtag to follow along when you just want to go back and revisit some of her moments. People really are doing good stuff on that. And yep. Yeah, we are here, as you said, to talk about, yeah, mostly her career and the good times she had. But before that, I want to go to two other topics before we go to the positives on that, because
yeah.
I also want to mention that she was, of course, the daughter of Kyoko Kimura and an Indonesian father. And basically that's where it all begins with her. And WH, as I said on post, Porezo also talked about the rejection that kids experience in Japan who are not 100% Japanese and who don't seem to fit into the conformity of the school system there. And that's where I think for a lot of people bullying begins. Similar to that was Aja Kong. There is a documentary about her online in a episode of the series Assignment Asia in 2016. She talked about her experience with being racially abused because she isn't 100% Japanese, of course, in school. And other kids would either ignore her or bully her with racist insults. And her mother encouraged her to be brave and ignore what others thought. But, of course, it wasn't easy. And I can only think that it might have been the same for Hana growing up. Yeah, but, you know, I think that it has to be taken into consideration, too, when we talk about what happened to her later on after she went on Terrace House.
Japan historically has had a very, a history of very pro, like, Japan-ness, for lack of a better term, with its people. That's not, like, a new thing that's happened throughout their history, you know. That can kind of be a thing. There's no doubt about that. And in some ways, I don't know, you know, I can't really give you the ins and outs of all the specifics of Japanese culture, to be honest with you. I know a lot of people from Japan and even native Japanese.
Yeah, that's why I really recite WH on this, because yeah. He's living in Japan and quoting him on this.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But like, there's no question, if you look throughout history, that is a thing in Japan. You know, like that's just it's just a fact, you know, ultimately. But yes, that's no question. She was half Japanese, half Indonesian. And who even knows what happened in her childhood? But you know, it's just a crazy thing.
You know, what did happen in her childhood was that her mother took her to many wrestling events, and basically, Hana grew up around the wrestling business, helping to sell her mother's merchandise and befriending many others within wrestling. That is very well documented. And there is nothing really other than that on her upbringing. We don't know like anything about her school life or what sports she played. At least I couldn't really gather anything. But she was around wrestling all the time. And you posted it on your Twitter, Dylan. Her first title win actually came at the age of 8 at NEO's Midsummer Tag Tournament 2005 on August 21st, 2005, when she pinned Tenny Mouse for the DDT Iron Man Heavy Metal title, which she then lost to her mother.
I was very angry whenever I think about this, because I knew that she beat me for first title win by almost half my age when I won my first title, my only title. And she did it at 8 years old. But, you know, I think it's perfectly fitting for you. And I love putting that photo up, and a lot of people really like that and said stuff. But I think it perfectly fits Hana because she was a champion from her very first match, literally, in wrestling.
You know what I especially liked about that photo was how happy her mother was in the background. She was smiling from ear to ear, knowing that's my daughter, she's going to be a wrestler, and here it all begins.
They both look so happy in that photo, and it was such a special moment for her to do this crazy DDT title and somehow be able to win it at 8 years old. You know, how many other people can say that? Listen, she beat everybody, not just me. Listen, Kobashi was not winning titles at 8 years old. No. So therefore, you could say she's one of the most decorated champions in pro res history if you use that scale on it. But it was a very happy and great moment in her life, and I think pretty much anybody can enjoy that little note if you weren't aware of it before I posted the photo or anything. It was a really funny and fun moment.
Yes, exactly. Fast forward 10 years. On October 1st, 2015, she entered the WrestleOne Pro Wrestling School at the age of 18 with 13 other students, and Kyoko Kimura attended the induction ceremony. Before her pro wrestling debut, she was announced to be part of the Super Terrific Cuties, the ring girls for Pancrase, in December of 2015. And I remember those pictures that they put up with Hana being in there and her name being written in capital letters. That was very early on in her career that had not really begun, that she already was a public figure.
That's right. You know, being a ring girl, I don't know any kind of aspersion she would have towards mixed martial arts itself, but definitely ring girl. Like you said, really right at the start of her career, very, very young in her life even, still technically a teenager at the time, but she was already getting looks from all kinds of people, already getting attention. And she just had a star presence to her right away.
Well, of course, Kyoko's husband is an MMA fighter. So yep. That's probably where the links are between that. And the debut she had on March 30, 2016 was against Reka Saiki, another wrestler that was in WrestleOne for a long time. And her first outside experience was against the aforementioned Aja Kong on June 19, 2016 in OZ Academy. And she also debuted for GWP and won their junior title / Prince of Pro Wrestling title on September 18, 2016, defeating Yako Fujigasaki in a tournament final. So very early in her career, collecting accolades that others would work long for.
Absolutely. You know, she had star potential right away in her career. I even noted one of her matches, you know, like you said, against Reika Saiki earlier on. And it's kind of crazy because it felt like the entire WrestleOne women's division was literally just Hana, and then they bring in Reika Saiki sometimes during that era, pretty much. She graduated the same day, March 30th. That was Reika's debut as well, officially.
Right.
Yeah, see, so they were doing some good work there. And they even the first, it was technically their second match, but a month later, on April 24th, that match aired that they had actually. So even their second match, they were already making television in WrestleOne. So she was already right there right away. She wrestled her mom really early on in her career, too. So 2016 was a big year for her.
Yeah, Hana Kimura and Reika Saiki, the Kai versus Sanada of the WrestleOne women's division.
Oh, exactly like that. I couldn't think of a better comparison.
You mentioned her mom in the show that they wrestled. It was a self-produced show. In the main event, Kyoko beat Hana in 15 minutes. And after that, Kyoko announced her retirement on January 22, 2017. That happened in Currican Hall. And we're going to talk about that here. In 2016, she also debuted for Sendai Girls, and for the first time in her career won the Artist of Stardom title. That is very notable because alongside her mom and Kagetsu, they defeated the three aces, Io Shirai, Kairi Hojo, and Mayu Iwatani for the belts, Dylan.
Yes, and obviously it was a natural fit for her to be in Stardom in Oedo Tai. You know, that's her mom's faction, obviously. So for her to get that title right away and to be, like you said, to go over the Daughters of Stardom, who obviously at that time, like, and especially at that time, the entire company really revolved around them. And so to move things more in this Oedo Tai direction with Kyoko and Kagetsu, I just showed, and then, like, look at her partners, Kagetsu and Kyoko, two of the most reliable and respected people in the entire company, and she was the third. That shows you that they already, technically she was a Wrestle 1 person for this entire early part of her career, but really Stardom at that point already knew that she had the potential to be somebody that they could make into a big star for them, or at least a top star in their company.
Yes, absolutely. They knew that. And that closed out the year 2016, at least the notable things that happened in Hana's early stages here. As I said, 2017 began with her mother's retirement show, January 22nd, Curtain Hall, where Aja Kong, Meiko Satomura, and Minoru Suzuki defeated Hana Kimura, Isao, Kyoko's husband, and Kyoko Kimura in the main event. And I remember that match because, of course, Hana Kimura facing Minoru Suzuki, that was special.
It was an experience, that entire match. I will say that. What a great moment for her. Like, both of her parents in there. Minoru Suzuki, a legend in wrestling,
Well,
to
Aja Kong
do
too,
this.
again.
Yeah, Aja Kong. Yeah, well, she'd already faced her, but still, it was still an experience. Anytime you're in the ring with Aja Kong, it's still very special. What a great thing for her to do that. She even got to go over her mom
Yes.
on the show as well. So, like, what a night that was. And how great was it of Kyoko to make this retirement show, the supposedly a celebration of her career, and she really put over Hana as much as anybody else on the show.
Goes to show how strong the connection, the bond between the two has been. And not
Absolutely.
only that, she in this bonus match that you mentioned that came after the main event six-man tag match, Hana beat her mom with a big boot, which was one of Kyoko's trademarks, and which then became one of Hana's trademarks, which she used very effectively in her wrestling career.
Yes, and who better to take it? Who better for the torch to get passed to, from mother to daughter? It really showed, like you said, a great bond between them, and also how big of a role wrestling played in both of their lives and their own relationship as well. So, there's no other form of life, I feel like, that you could pass along a physical attack to your child, but in pro wrestling it's somehow made possible. But just getting to go over her was such a big deal for her as well, and like you said, she took her big move and, like you said, continued to use it very effectively.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, 2017 and in 2018, as you said, she wrestled mostly for Stardom, but also for Sendai Girls and her home promotion, Wrestle 1, winning the Goddesses of Stardom title with Kagetsu. And she held it for almost one full year. And she also had her first overseas matches in 2017 for RCW in Spain, for Ring of Honor in 2018, also for Eve, and also for some Mexican promotions later on when she went to have an excursion there. For example, Chaos Lucha Libre and Promociones Contreras in Mexico, which also led to her changing her looks, Dylan.
Well, just to back up again, 2017 was kind of a big year for her in her original run because it set off two very important feuds for that time. Well, not really feud, but it set up a feud. First of all, her pairing with Kagetsu and winning the titles, the tag team titles, it was something that would play into storylines later on and set up a really nice run with them as a team. And it was so smart, again, very classic pro
Yeah,
wrestling booking
absolutely.
by Stardom itself to have this very reliable and respected veteran team with this rookie that you have big plans for and want to see develop and help her develop. That was really the main thing on that end. But one of my favorite portions of Hana's career at this point was, you mentioned it in Sendai Girls, mm-hmm. where she had a feud with Mika Iwata / Shirahime at the time, spanning two different names. They had matches in with Mika, and she had a lot of good matches, but I think the first portion, because I have to say, like I said, as a wrestler, I wasn't as huge of a fan of hers as you were right away. But the first time I really took notice of her from an in-ring perspective, and like saying that, okay, she is improving. She's always had the charisma and the presence, mm-hmm. but now the in-ring starting to come together, was her match from April 19th, 2018.
Yep.
In Sendai versus Mika Iwata. And it was that was really the best match of their feud, but any of their matches that you could find online, and I've checked, I know that Iwata matches online, but anything you could find of their feud was really good, and that was a big deal for both of them at the time, but especially Hana.
Yes, and on a card that had Ayako Hamada versus Shio Hashimoto, Io Shirai versus Meiko Satomura in a 20-minute time limit draw, that match, Mika Iwata versus Hana Kimura, is considered one of the best matches of that entire show back then. That is something that has to be put out there because, as you said, two very young wrestlers at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great feud between them, a great series of matches. Maybe feud's a little dramatic, but it was a great series of matches between them and great for both of their careers to be elevated to that level. And like you said, shine right up there with those legends of Joshi like Meiko, Hamada, and some of the top stars like Io and Chihiro at the time. So, yeah.
Yeah, as I said, the year 2018 then brought a change. Change of looks and a change of attitude too for Hana Kimura. Well, the change of looks, I always thought that it looked so menacing and so interesting. It made her not a completely new character, I would say, but it highlighted more the fierce part of her character, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it was an interesting setup to all of that, because right before she left, remember, you gotta understand, at this point, we're talking about the title reigns, she was double champion for at this point, mm-hmm. you know, artists and goddesses, and she lost both of them. And right after she lost both of the titles, she went to Mexico, and she went to America as well for Ring of Honor. Had a couple of matches, it wasn't like this big long yeah. run or anything. But I will say that in her Mexican run, she had one of my all-time favorite and most used memes on Twitter to this day, which she was cutting a promo on people, and the crowd obviously responded negatively, and she suddenly has a great reaction where she says, "Why are you booing me? I'm right!" Which I personally feel a lot of times on this show, so I can really relate to her, because I feel like sometimes, you know, some people disagree with me, and
but I would
never go as far
as to publicly boo you, come on.
Probably even a lot worse than that, but then whatever they do, I always want to respond with that meme of Hana there, but like you said, then she came back with a brand new look. Yeah, the new look, at first, I thought that it was interesting in a good way, that she, for a heelish type of way, like you said, maybe not menacing, I just thought it was really funky, and took away, like, because before her look, she was a very idle type of look, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so if you're going to go for a heel, this totally reworked all of that. It gave a little bit of a tribute to her mom as well.
Sure.
When she came in there. So I thought that was really cool. A lot of people actually didn't like that, I remember at the time, and were like, oh, we want Hana back. But I was like, actually, it's kind of cool that she tributes her mom. And it was effective, ultimately. But she did change it later on as well.
She did. It's kind of natural that there would be people saying that they liked the look before better. Usually when wrestlers change their looks, that you have that portion of the audience. And that's fine too, I think. It just showed that she drew a lot of attention from a lot of people. And once she came back to Japan, she entered the Goddesses of Stardom Tag League in 2018 with Mary Apache. And they picked up 8 points in the tournament, so not making it to the finals, but being very successful still in their block. And, you know, this team was very interesting because it, of course, had the influence from Mexico with Mary Apache. And it was something different, a different way that she took from, in comparison to what she did before with Kagetsu.
Again, the good thing about it is that you have a reliable veteran to team with her just to continue that growth and a different style as well. I think she picked up a lot behind the scenes more so than being a big deal for a storyline purpose. But it also did get her her relation to Natsumi, which is Mary's daughter, and that continued even in Tokyo Cyber Squad, technically. So that was a little something there. But yeah, like I said, it was a good little start for her. But she clearly wasn't reaching her stride at this point where she would become later.
No, that really was a point in time in her career that she was trying to figure out what would work the best for her. And of course, as a young wrestler like she was, you'll try different things. And that look, of course, was vastly different from, as you said, the more idol-like look she had before. Trying that and then going into different directions. That is what young wrestlers really need to do to find out who they are. And, well, if we look at the most recent photos that we have from Hana, she really found that look that made her special and that made her different from everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that really captured people's interest really quick. As soon as you see her, she pops off the screen now in her current attire. But, you know, I think all of her looks have different value to them, so to speak. You know, like I said, early on, it was more like an idol. But almost kind of a dark idol to really fit in the Oedo Tai stick, you could say the aesthetic. And
yeah,
you gotta say that in
Wrestle One, she always was that face Hana, that more idol like Hana, in comparison to the dark Hana that she portrayed in Stardom.
Yes, that's right. And it had to be that way in Oedo Tai, pretty much. You know, just to fit in with their aesthetic. But I was going to bring up Wrestle One because at this time, another big thing happened to her with her team with Asuka that came about around this time, Flourish, obviously, which was a very short-lived team and did not benefit from Wrestle One not going with the women that much, unfortunately. But whatever they did, I think they had a very, like, I don't want to say cult-like popularity, but a very grassroots fan base. Yep. You know, even though they didn't have many matches, everybody seemed to like them as a team.
Yes, I was just going to bring that up, that in April 2018, she teamed with Asuka for the first time. And that team, I really like both wrestlers a lot. I'm a big Asuka fan, I'm a big Hana Kimura fan, and those two together, in my opinion, were a great tag team. And that tag team had a lot more legs to it. As you said, they didn't really have a lot of matches, but those that we were able to see, I really liked, and I thought that together they could have been a really strong and popular act.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing with Wrestle One, it's like they moved on from Reika Saiki, and then Asuka filled that role. Like, yeah. Hey, we have Hana Kimura signed, and sometimes we'll bring in Asuka. And that's our women's division. So they actually wrestled a couple of times before that, but then they teamed up, and every time you would see them, they made appearances on, like, Battlemen News and stuff like that, and had little features online, and everybody really vibed with them, and their team. So they did a really good job too. They had some good matches too with what little they did. If you check out any of their matches, they did a really good job in them. So I really like Flourish as well. They had a lot like you said, they had a lot more legs to them if Wrestle One had promoted women better or if we could have seen this team and Stardom somehow. But it was still a good team and worth noting in her career.
Yeah, for example, one match you can check out is from Wrestle One on January 1st, 2019. Asuka and Hana Kimura beat Miyuki Takase and Saki Shinkiba first ring. And then, of course, from Wrestle Wars 2019, which was Hana's final match in Wrestle One, when Reika Saiki and Yuki Hotta beat the team of Flourish in 12 minutes, Ota Ward Gymnasium, big show for Wrestle One. And after that, Hana announced that she would be leaving WrestleOne permanently to join Stardom.
That's right. Obviously, a big change in her career, because this is something that I had speculated on at the time, and I think really anybody can kind of see this, that, like you said, she was still finding herself a little bit, but when she came back from Mexico, she was far from a featured player, and she was somebody that right away you could tell that she was going to be a star. You know, you'd have to be... You just have to be blind or not understand wrestling to not see that, just because of her charisma and her presence, never mind her wrestling or whatever. But once she was able to sign that contract, that's something that we've seen in multiple Japanese companies. You know, maybe if somebody's a freelancer, they always keep them bubbling, but they never really go all the way with them. But when she finally signed that contract, it really felt like, okay, now is the time for Hana. She's going to be put in a big position in the next year or two. And... And the rest was history, pretty much, because that's exactly what happened, pretty much. She was definitely a featured player going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. The year 2019, after being signed to Stardom, also brought her to the Madison Square Garden, where she appeared in a dark match. And she became one of those wrestlers, one of those few wrestlers, that within 1 year wrestled in both the Madison Square Garden and the Tokyo Dome. So that's another fact here. And basically she became, as you said, a crucial part of Stardom, as she became the leader of the Tokyo Cyber Squad. At first, the unit didn't have her name, and it then kind of morphed into being Tokyo Cyber Squad. And it became a group that kind of rivaled Oedo Tai in the sense that it recruits a lot of foreign wrestlers, like, for example, Bobby Tyler, Zoe Lucas, Leila Hirsch is the latest example. But we didn't only get messages from those who were in Tokyo Cyber Squad with her, but also from peers that she was with in Oedo Tai. For example, on Twitter, Martina put out that Hana always was one of those that was very friendly with the foreigners coming in, because she spoke good English and she always wanted to learn more English and was always there for the foreign wrestlers coming in.
Yeah, she even said one time that she really loved America and going there and wanted to wrestle there and stuff. And when Tokyo Cyber Squad hit the scene, I think that they were such a... Right away, their aesthetic was so different, and again, this was something that really Hana got to shine in this role in this new group, because it was so vibrant and colorful. Everything about them popped off the screen, and Hana was at the forefront of that with the pink hair and the brightly colored gear, the bright green gear and stuff. It was just something that became really popular right away. Yeah. And I think if you were a new fan of Joshi or you didn't really know anything about Stardom, as soon as you see Tokyo Cyber Squad, they really stand out from the other ones, the other factions in Stardom right away. So it was a really brilliant decision to put her together. And again, the makeup of the group was really smart booking by whoever put this together, because you look at the main, you know, the A squad of Tokyo Cyber Squad, and you had Hana, who's such a charismatic personality, like, you know, some like true star presence. Then you put beside her Jungle Kiona, one of the best wrestlers in, you know, Stardom in terms of in-ring. Konami, one of the best wrestlers in terms of in-ring. But they never really got to take that next step, because it felt like maybe they thought they were missing something charisma-wise. So who better to put them with than with Hana? So it's like they all balanced each other out and fitted with each other perfectly in such a great way. So it's such a great group when you think about it. It helped all three of those people specifically. Obviously, the foreign wrestlers were a big part of that, and also the young wrestlers too that they had there. There were multiple rookies in Tokyo Cyber Squad that really emulated Hana, if you notice, which was a really interesting there. But it was just a great group and a big step forward for Hana. This was the point where you could see, this is somebody that's got, there's going to be big plans in the next year, if not in the next couple of months.
Yeah, in the next couple of months. As you said, the putting her name on the dotted line, on the contract, really rocket started all of that, because she won the 5-star Grand Prix in 2019, going over her stablemate, Konami, in the finals. So the big plans were really visible, and we could see in which direction that would go.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. Another thing, just to back up one more time with the Tokyo Cyber Squad, what really led to that was after in 2018 she turned on Oedo Tai, and that was a big deal. You know, and on Kagetsu. Like I said earlier in her career, that was the final straw, pretty much, of a storyline that had been going on for like 3 years, and that finally led to her receiving her first Red Belt title match, a World of Stardom title match in October 2018, and that was a kind of a controversial match at the time, and things were going crazy.
Yeah,
and it felt like she hadn't found herself then. So then, when you have Tokyo Cyber Squad, she puts the name of the dotted line, like you said. They immediately put them in the artist category again. They beat Stars, which is the, you know, the home army of Stardom, in May 2019 for the artist titles, her Konami Jungle. Then, as you mentioned, Five-Star Grand Prix time comes around. And when that tournament came around, they did a good job of having intrigue in terms of who was going to win. I predicted Hana at first, but there were multiple people that were in the running. It wasn't like some obvious thing. So
yeah, I remember the discussions that we had earlier in the year about who would win the tournament. And as you said, it really wasn't as obvious as the G1 winners usually are.
Exactly. So they did a good job of that. And that tournament had multiple injuries and things like that, so they had to rebook on the fly a little bit. Many people think that it was actually going to be Jungle that was in the final against her. That's just speculation, obviously. But it would have made a lot of sense, to be honest, if that had happened. But instead, they went with Konami, which was a great backup. And Hana won the tournament triumphantly, and you know, that she got to have the crown. She just had a big pop. This was when they had the very first ever Stardom show with the screen in the entranceway, with the little very low rent entrance videos for the people. But it's better than nothing, which is what they had before. So you could feel like her winning this, and this was a very successful tournament in terms of drawing, you know, attendance wise. This felt like the company was taking a step up. And that's another thing we didn't really get into that much. During the times when she was down and younger, on 2018 maybe to 2017, it felt like the company had really lost its way in a lot of ways, to be honest with you. And then later on in 2018, you had the Kagetsu reign, you had Momo in a big reign, and things, and the pieces were set up perfectly for a new star to come up. And then she did. Obviously, we don't know the exact specifics of when Bushiroad would have their hands in Stardom, but it felt like at this point, with the new Titantron video, and I use that term loosely, but the new screen, and Hana Kimura winning the title, looking like a huge star to come, it felt like the entire company was moving on the right track, with her leading the charge in a lot of ways. So that's very interesting for somebody who had never really won the red belt, and had only challenged once before she had won the tournament, and was still very young in her career. It still felt like, to me, the eyes and the spotlight was on Hana at this point.
Yeah. She received another shot at the red belt on October 14, 2019, against then-champion B. Priestley. A match that is considered to be a good one.
On the Grand Prix, I have to mention too that she started out again to bring up her in-ring prowess. At first, she was more or less a character worker. At one point, she even had an 8-second match with Saki Kashima, and she was more about her promo. She was super charismatic, getting her character over. But then a switch got flipped on the last half of the tournament, really the last couple of days, where she had 3 straight matches, which were just phenomenal, versus Mayu Iwatani, Momo Watanabe, and Hazuki. 3 straight matches for her, and all 3 of those were her best of the tournament, in my opinion. And the Hazuki match was right up there with among any of the tournament matches with anybody. So I thought Hana really brought it. Even though the final wasn't as great as those 3 matches, her winning was a big deal, and she really finished it on a strong note, in terms of showing her in-ring prowess. And it felt like, too, she was developing her own style, which was a little bit different than Kyoko, because she was developing more of a brawling edge to her wrestling as well. So I really appreciated that a lot. I thought she was doing a great job. She was firing on all cylinders pretty much at the point when she won the red belt, or when she challenged for the red belt. I wish she had won the red belt now, but when she challenged for it, it really felt like she was firing on all cylinders.
Yes, she began finding her own style, as you said, and what I was searching for on that same show that she challenged for the red belt, Rossy Ogawa presented Julia as the newest member of the Stardom roster, setting up another piece that in the plans that Stardom had would be one of the top programs in 2020. With Julia coming in from Ice Ribbon, you had another extremely charismatic and strong character that was different than all other characters were in Ice Ribbon, where Julia came from. And of course, teaming them up or having them clash would have been one of the main storylines going in 2020 and beyond.
Oh, absolutely. It was a natural pairing, like one way or the other. You just look at Julia, and she has a lot of similarities to Hana in look, wrestling. Like, it felt like a really natural pairing. So right away, you could see that they were going to do something together. But, you know, Tokyo Cyber Squad was already a faction. You didn't really need to have four people in it. Mm. So I could definitely see why they had them feud rather than team together. But I actually think that would have came somewhere down the line, pretty much. Some way along the line, they would have teamed up somehow, some way, because I just think they're too natural of a pairing. to be better.
Somewhere down the line was January 4th, 2020, when Arisa Hoshiki and Mayu Iwatani beat Julia and Hana Kimura in the dark match, in the Tokyo Dome match that we still have not seen due to, like, distribution limitations that we have. So, I don't know.
Before that, though, they had a match, actually. Their first match of their series at the year-end climax. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the better ones on the show. And again, really accelerated Hana's growth as a brawling style of wrestler. Great hatred and fire. And in the match with Hazuki in this match as well, she really showed that she had a lot of fire in her in these matches, that she could pull this off in a great way. In these five-star Grand Prix, she debuted some new moves, the Tiger Lily and Hydrangea. They were great moves. Everyone liked them. And, you know, Julia was a great partner for her in this match. And Julia was somebody that was struggling in Stardom up to that point. She really wasn't having great matches in her Stardom at that point. But when she faced Hana, it all clicked for both of them. And again, it just felt like a natural pairing. The Tokyo Dome match, it didn't mean anything in terms of storylines, but it was a big deal for all of them to be in the Tokyo Dome. And what a great honor for these four.
Yeah.
And the, you know, all four of them, really, but Hana specifically, it was a great big deal for her to be in this Tokyo Dome setting.
Like, it didn't mean anything in a storyline sense, but putting these four out there was a strong statement by the company, who would be the top stars going forward. And of course, with Arisa Hoshiki and Mayu Iwatani, that was clear before the show. And Julia and Hana Kimura on the other side, being two of the newer, with Julia the newer ones and Hana Kimura on the up and coming. So those four definitely were slated to be the big names that Stardom would put out, with Bushiroad being the new parent company. They would place those four very strongly in not only in the wrestling part, but also in the public eye.
Absolutely. That's exactly what that was all about. These are the four wrestlers to carry us in the future. And unfortunately, two of them aren't wrestling anymore.
Yep.
Hoshiki and Hana. But Hana was definitely, like, as soon as Bushiroad bought Stardom, and you could kind of look at their pattern with how they ran New Japan and the wrestling product they had, basically everyone thought Hana was going to be the top star, along with Julia. Like, they didn't sign Julia and go through all that bullcrap to not push her really heavily, you know? Mm. So everyone kind of knew that those two, especially, those two would always be there. They were like the legacy Stardom characters, especially Mayu. Hoshiki still knew, but was also an original Stardom wrestler as well. But Julia and Hana felt like the two that were going to carry the company when things really got elevated by Bushiroad. And unfortunately, the difficulties that would come in terms of promoting wrestling were right around the corner with the coronavirus.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the last match she had was on March 24 in the first round of the Cinderella tournament, where she drew with Mayu Iwatani. And I guess there is no way around that. 2019, Hana Kimura made her debut on a show called Terrace House, Dylan.
Yeah, at the time, I don't know, again, I don't know how much Bushiroad had to do with this specifically or not, but at the time, you have to understand that this was considered like a really good thing for her. Mm-hmm. Terrace House, if you don't know it, is a really popular show in Japan. It's a reality TV show. Myself and Striga, I think both of us would not be considered reality show experts.
No.
Especially not Japanese reality shows either. But this show, I really had never had any interest in it. I had heard about it before, vaguely, because, I know some people in Japan, and they might be fans of it or whatever. But I had really never watched it. So when she got announced, I was like, whoa, this is a big deal to have a Joshi wrestler. It could have been anybody. Like I said, someone like Hoshiki and Iwatani are more wrestlers that I like personally in terms of an in-ring. But just the fact that it was Hana Kimura, this great star in the making, coming in super charismatic, perfect fit for a reality show. So they have all these guys. Well, there's like, you know, there's a few guys and a few girls. They all live in the same house, pretty much. That's the basics of the show. There's a million reality shows that follow a similar path, starting with The Real World back in like 1993 or whatever it was. But that's kind of the gist of it. They all live together. So she came in at the midway point of her season. It's not like she was a first cast member or anything. She came in like the 15th or 16th episode, I think, of the series. And this is kind of a misnomer that a lot of people have said online, considering everything that's happened. So I just want to kind of settle this part of it. She was actually originally on the show. She was much more of like her storyline on the show was much more of a babyface type of deal. So at first she was like, her first major deal was that she went after this one guy in the house, and that was kind of like her love interest. At one point, even in the 5-star Grand Prix, they show a segment on it on Terrace House, and she's all like, I want to ask him out, but I'm too shy. That was like her character on the show. So then she's like, if I win the tournament tonight, I'll ask him out.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah, exactly. And amazingly, she won the tournament. So she did get her date with that guy. But the thing is, what made her sympathetic in the show is that the guy didn't choose her. He went with another girl over her. So what a weirdo like that guy was, first of all. But that was kind of like, that put sympathy on her, you know, at that point. And everything was all right. Later on, as things went along, things kind of took a turn when she got put in with this love interest with this other guy, Kai. Not our Kai. This is a completely different Kai. He was like this comedian guy, but he was a real, like, he's like the prototypical starving artist type of person. He wasn't making any money at his comedy work. He wasn't doing a good job. And everyone kind of looked at him like kind of a loser. You know, that was kind of like his role on the show at the time. And everything started to turn bad when that happened, but things finally came to a head when it was an episode that aired during late March in Japan. And basically, first of all, there was this other guy who wanted a double date, and Kai was all like, no, I don't want to go. I don't have any money, so like, don't take me. And then the other guy was like, no, bring Hana along. It'll be great. I'll pay for everything. And Kai's like, all right. So then when they get there, Hana's like, wow, why aren't you paying for anything? And, you know, it was more like, it wasn't like a negative view of Hana or anything like that at that time. It was more about Kai being down on his luck or whatever. So, and that started there, and Hana was like, yeah, I'm not really that impressed with this guy. So when the thing that really set it off was when they got back home, she asked him to wash her outfit that she was going to wear at the Tokyo Dome, her wrestling outfit. And it shrunk in the wash. Like, he kind of screwed it up, pretty much. So then she cuts a huge heel promo on him, pretty much. Like, she goes off on this guy, pretty much. And at one point, the most famous portion of this, I feel like I can't speak on this for sure as, like, Terrace House expert, but as soon as this came out, there were all kinds of GIFs floating around on Twitter, pretty much, of this argument. And she, like, she was wearing a hat, and he, like, flipped his hat off and was like, "Don't you wear that stupid hat." I'm paraphrasing, but she went off on him, and when that happened, unfortunately, that's when all this bullcrap started.
Yeah.
Because a really, really, it was like immediately, like, huge blowback against her. Like, nobody was happy with her in that episode.
And, you know, there have been talks about wrestling promotions coaching their wrestlers how to deal with social media and how to deal with resentment or even bullying on social media. But there is one thing to coach your wrestlers in a way that they would know how to respond to that audience. Because in comparison to that show, Terrace House, or even any other big television show, wrestling is a small pond. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can prepare anyone to suddenly be exposed to that big of an audience and to, I guess, exponential bullying that she received through those channels online. I don't know that any wrestling promotion has the right tools, or if anyone has the right tools to do so. I would say the TV company or the show themselves would have to do something like that. But from what I know from reality shows, it is that technically they have the exact different mindset, because they want to make a big, big deal out of their characters and thus want to portray them as good and evil, and there is usually very few in between.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, if I got anything wrong on that recap, sure. It was, I know it's basically the story, but that's, you know, that's basically how it happened. But if there was any details I misread or whatever, or missaid to any Terrace House fans like that, I'd like to apologize and feel free to correct me on that. But that was basically the story of it, you know, more or less. So I'm really glad you said that, actually, Stream, because that's something that's really been on my mind a lot lately in these last couple of days where we've seen all this come out. You know, like I said, I think anybody online with any kind of platform is going to get blowback of some sort for something. Hmm. Like, for whether it's right or wrong or otherwise. Like, you know, even us, like, we've dealt with some crazy stuff before. I know you have.
Sure.
And I was trying, like, I think I'm pretty thick-skinned about this sort of thing. Like, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about this sort of thing, and I always kind of take the tack, like, don't let them win. But if I were in Hana Kimura's shoes, this was somebody you got to understand. She was facing hundreds and sometimes maybe even thousands of people coming at her, wanting her to die.
Yeah.
Every day. Like, every day, like, she was dealing with this. Like, this was not even, like, bullying is not strong enough of a word, in my opinion.
Is there a word? I don't know.
It's straight up harassment and abuse. Yeah. Is what it's like. And it was unnecessary. And I think some people, too, there's been a lot of, like, people that maybe have good intentions, but maybe are not really getting the point. And an example I'll use of that is, like, one of the things that I read a lot is that, man, this reality show, it's a reality show. It's not even real. And that's true. But, like, even if that was her true personality, like, even if she was even worse, even if she was the biggest asshole in the world to this guy, like, nobody deserves what she went through. And like you said, no amount of training like I said, and what you've been through in your life, how tough you are, how thick of a skin you had. Like I said, you know, I feel like anybody would get worn down by that eventually, and who knows? You know, not, like, no matter how tough you are, or how thick skinned you are, or how much training you went through, what she went through was a horrible, horrible thing, and some really terrible comments from all sorts of people. And it was just nonstop. It was never ending. And I think that was something that really was one of the hardest things in this environment, because maybe in normal circumstances, she would go out with her friends, go out and wrestle, go out and live her life and receive love from the wrestling fans, you know. But now what does she have in this virus, in this lockdown? She has going to her phone on Twitter or going to her phone on Instagram. So it's like at every single time that she would open it up, that's the kind of stuff she was seeing. And I know some people have screenshotted stuff, and it's all vile.
Yeah.
That's what she was dealing with. So, like, I'm really glad you made that point, Stricker, because I was going to say that myself. I really agree, and I hate that she went through this these last couple of months. I don't want to – I think it's really easy to react to this with anger and sadness, obviously. But I don't want to blame any one entity or person like Terrace House or anything like that. But it's hard because in my heart, ultimately, like, and a lot of people have brought up different points that have happened, and maybe some stuff is true, maybe something had something to do with it, maybe it had nothing to do with it. Nobody was in her mind these last couple of months, but in my heart, I really believe if she was never on that Terrace House show, there's a 100% chance she's still alive today.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. That's where we stand right now.
It sucks. This is a 22-year-old woman that we've lost, ultimately.
Yes, well, it's absolutely crazy when you look at the date of birth, 1997. She's only a couple of years older than a few of my oldest students. That's just absolutely crazy.
She's 2 years younger than my younger sister, you know?
Yeah.
And so seeing that was freaky. You know, she was right. And another thing, like, this is something I really want people to understand about her, and I don't want to speak for her or anything, but in her, like, she was somebody that really liked wrestling. She really liked being looked at, being vibrant and colorful and strong and sexy and beautiful and admired. She was all of those things. She loved being those things, and it all came so naturally to her. And how, like, even with her, somebody so talented, so, like, she, it felt like on the outside, if you just outside look again, she had everything going for her, was about to be the top star of a very much a growing company. And look at all of these demons that she had to fight at the same time. You know, none of that could change anything. Like, that's one of the saddest parts of all this. Like, if she had stayed alive, she would have almost assuredly have been the top star of this company that had huge backing from Bushiroad, had a bright future. She had everything, the world in her hands, and she was an inspiration and admired by people. And you look at her, one of her last posts, and it just said, "I want love," you know? And it felt like, I don't know how it happened, but it felt like with all of this craziness, with the abuse that she took online and the sadness that she felt, all that love that she did have, and we saw that she has love based on what happened after she passed, but all of that got wrapped up in this horrible thing that she went through, and these horrible things that she went through, and that's one of the most terrible things about it all, is because, you know, this is a really scary thing to face, because there are a lot of people out there that doesn't have that success, you know? That doesn't have all of these things going for them like she does. And they could be going through some crazy stuff too. And if Hana can't deal with it, it's scary to think of what the pain that these others, that all the other people out there are going through right there. And that's something that I was really thinking about a lot, was just how horrible this was and how amazing of a person Hana was, that I just hope that everyone can see that what I said before was the main thing, is that she loved all this stuff that she was doing for most of her life until this horrible thing that happened, you know, this horrible response that she received. She was amazing in so many ways, and I know I'm not the only one who thinks that, but it's just a really a tragic, tragic day in all of wrestling. And a tragic week, but this is so tragic with her specifically that it sent shockwaves to all kinds of places and is going to continue to send shockwaves for long after we record the show.
As I said in the beginning, there's really nothing that I can compare this with that has hit me harder than this one in recent years. So, yeah, I just hope that we could shed a little light on what a bright character and what an apparently very lovely human being she was, and what a star potential she had. And I don't know, from my standpoint, I can't add anything to what you just said. Is there anything that you want to shout out, any matches that you still have on your list that you want to give the listeners to look back at?
We went through a lot of the big ones. You know, we've done some stuff in the past, some projects like the Week of projects and stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of the ones I listed were kind of like a mini version of that. You can watch all of them. It was more than a week, but still, I think Hana deserves more than a week, to be honest. So you know, watch whatever you can. But those were some of the biggest ones, the ones that we talked about before. And I would highly advise everyone to watch her and check her out, because you get to see not only an amazing person that she was, but the amazing growth that she had in her craft of pro wrestling, that she grew so much from that first match with Reika Saiki to her last match with Iwatani, which is another match that a lot of people liked, and it felt like she had a lot of upside even this year. So I think Hana would really love that if people didn't just remember her for the last days, you know, because I think that's, again, what I mentioned earlier. When you see, like, the New York Times and all this reporting on it, they don't really care that she was a wrestler. Like, you know, like, they know that she was a star on a Netflix show and that she killed herself. And that's what they're going to vote. That's what they're going to zone in on. But to the rest of us, and hopefully anybody listening to this, please take a moment of your time to remember Hana Kimura as the wrestler, as the person, and all of the great things that she did in her life, because there was so much good that she brought to the table, even in just a very young career, less than 5 years of her career. And she still was so known and so famous and has rocked the world and made such an impact, even if it was in, even if it brought a lot of pain in this tragic way, too.
Absolutely. Can't and won't add anything more to this. This has been the life and death of Hana Kimura, Dangerous Flower Forever. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
Yes, sir.
Stream worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.